Hello, everyone, and welcome to Medium Cool, a movie podcast. I'm your host, Austin Glidden, and as always, you can find us on social media by searching Medium Cool Pod on Instagram, or you can find us, or not find us, but talk to us via email. That is mediumcoolpod@gmail.com. Definitely get a hold of us. Let us know what you've seen. Let us know if you agree or disagree with the things that I or we talk about on here, etc. I want to first start off, before I get to today's episode, I want to start off by saying how big of a bummer it is to have heard about Donald Sutherland's passing. The amount of great movies and the impact that he had, especially on 70s and 80s cinema, and just how beloved he seemed to be. It's just a real bummer. After I found out that he had passed, and Matthew Soucy, longtime friend of the show and guest many times, we did the Bergman Marathon. He's done all of the Best of the Year episodes with us so far. And Matt sent me a message. He's like, "Hey, man, you do anything on Donald Sutherland?" Basically implying, like, I want to be a part of this. So I couldn't do anything this week because I had a few things planned that I needed to be done. And I was like, you know what? Next week we'll do it. So next week I'll have Matt Soucy on here. We're going to talk about Donald Sutherland at large, a proper memorial episode. We're going to pick a few films ourselves. We're not going to do full reviews, but we're mostly going to focus on, how much we love those movies and how much we love Donald Sutherland in them. I know that I want to talk about MASH. I've never seen Ordinary People. I'm going to watch that between now and next week so I can have an opinion on that. But he also had parts in things like JFK and Pride and Prejudice and like a bunch of random things that this guy was in. He was all over the place. Don't Look Now, of course, being one of the kind of films that people consider like a horror movie, and it's usually on the best horror movies of all time, not by casual moviegoers maybe or horror aficionados, but by like cinephiles who are like Letterboxd nerds. Don't Look Now is one of their favorites. Of course, Donald Sutherland stars in that. I was actually never a fan of that movie, if I'm honest. It makes me want to rewatch it. It's on the Criterion Channel right now. So I might rewatch that before next week as well, just so I have an updated opinion, because it was a real bummer. It really was. Movies like Clute and Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978 and movies like that just hold a special place in my heart. So, condolences to anyone that knew him. The odds of you listening to this is slim, but you know what? If you are, sincerely, we hate to hear that. That said, next week we'll do something on Donald Sutherland. This week, however, I am finally coming through, Adj. If you're listening to this, Adj messaged us on Instagram, said, "Hey man, have you watched Godzilla Minus One yet? I'd love to hear your thoughts." This was very shortly after our best of list at the very beginning of this year in January. And I didn't get a chance to see this until about a month ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that. About a month, actually, almost exactly a month ago. I actually finally got to see this. I had an opportunity to see it right before it came out on streaming, which I didn't know was coming out on streaming. But it is available on Netflix. So if you have not seen Godzilla Minus One, go check that out. But I'm going to talk about that today. I'll give you my thoughts on that and finally follow up with Adj on that one. And then I also got a pre-screening thing from A24 again for Janet Planet, which comes out this Friday. There was a limited release last Friday, but the nationwide release is this Friday, the 28th. So I want to make sure that you guys get my thoughts on that before it opens in a theater near you, hopefully. So I'll give you that. Like I said, I'm only going to do two movies today, but like I said, we're going to do a Donald Sutherland thing next week. I also really want to do something on Paul Schrader. His birthday is July 22nd, if I remember correctly. Either way, it's in July. So I thought I would try to take July to be kind of a Friedkin? What? Wrong person. But I would love for to have like a Paul Schrader marathon, because Criterion Channel has a bunch of Paul Schrader movies up right now, and it would be so sick to watch them and have a reason to. So I'm really excited to watch some of the movies I haven't seen, like Blue Collar, Cat People. I've never seen American Gigolo. I've never seen Mishima Life in Four Chapters, which is by far his most acclaimed. But I have seen movies like Hardcore, for example. I would love to revisit that movie. Big fan. I saw Autofocus, which is on the Criterion Channel as well, years and years ago. I mean, maybe man, when did that come out? 2002 or three? And I probably saw it within a year of its release. We rented it. So whenever it came out, a friend of mine rented it. So, yeah, I would love to do that. Let me know what you think of that, because I would love to kind of prioritize that, and maybe I can get some other people in to talk about Schrader as well. I'd love to do just kind of an overall Schrader episode. It'd be really fun to do kind of a retrospective almost or something. So, you know, I have a few things, baking in there right now. Not bacon, but, you know, baking. I'm digressing severely, so I'm going to go ahead and hop over to Godzilla Minus One. Here are my thoughts on that movie. Again, it came out last year, but a gentleman by the name of Adj asked us on Instagram what our thoughts were, and I'm going to give you mine in just a moment. Godzilla Minus One. In my notes, I put 2024. Wrong. It was 2023. Came out December 1st, 2023. Directed by Takashi Yamazaki. The budget was $10 to $12 million, and the box office was $115 million. Huge success, this one. Streaming on Netflix right now. And I'm not going to go through the whole rigmarole of trying to give you a synopsis and all that. This is a Godzilla movie, quite frankly. But unlike the new kind of Godzilla versus Kong type Godzilla movies, this one kind of harkens back to the original intent of the old, like 50s and 60s and even 70s Godzilla movies. Less the more kaiju monster battles and more back to the people, like the original Godzilla, where it's talking, where there's some, you know, political undertones here and subtext, and there's a giant monster as a result of, like, you know, fucking war and stuff. So this movie, it's a Godzilla movie. It's pretty cool. I'll just tell you that right off the bat. Godzilla Minus One is a film that is rich with thematic content. I'll get to some of that here in a moment, but the film made history at the 96th Academy Awards, becoming the first Japanese film to be nominated for Best Visual Effects and the first movie in the Godzilla franchise over the last 70 years to earn an Oscar nomination, period. So big, big historical importance there, but it explores several profound themes that I want to touch on here in a moment. Post-war trauma and just the idea of rebuilding a nation, guilt, grief, and remorse ties into it, human resilience, the metaphor of kind of national guilt as well kind of plays a role here. And these themes really intertwine to create a narrative that is both character-driven drama and a spectacle, quite frankly. And it earns the film critical acclaim and recognition for its visual effects and the storytelling as well, which, hey, kudos to the movie. This feels almost at times like a live-action anime. And by that, I mean, you know how kind of hyperbolic and ridiculous anime can be? And I mean that as a compliment, because I do like anime, though I wouldn't call myself like an anime guy. But I really, the ones I love, I really love. You know, they're some of my favorite movies. But there are characters in this that are just wacky. And when you learn some of the things that I've learned about Yamazaki as he was making this movie, it starts to make a lot of sense. For example, Yamazaki drew inspiration from classic Godzilla movies, of course, and you can feel that here definitely. But he also took inspiration from works of renowned directors like Hayao Miyazaki, who did anime, and you can definitely see it in some of the characters and things like that. I just kept saying that the whole time I was watching with a couple of my friends. I was just like, dude, that guy is an anime guy. Like you could just draw him exactly as he is, and that is an anime guy. But also Steven Spielberg, which you can also, that's like the other half of this movie. It's like you have these kind of very Miyazaki-ish anime style live action stuff, and then you have this Steven Spielberg kind of spectacle stuff. But at the same time, it's its own. It's not like a ripoff of those two things. But when I read that those two, Miyazaki and Spielberg, were inspirations, I was like, wow, that is actually exactly what I was thinking, though I didn't have the words for that. Like, I hadn't put that exact thing together, but yes, that makes total sense to me. But the blend of those influences is reflected in the film's storytelling and visual effects for sure. So I love that. So So back to the themes here. You know, I mentioned post-war trauma and kind of rebuilding the nation. The film definitely delves into the complexities of post-World War II Japan, and it highlights the challenges of the nation needing to rebuild and the sustained trauma of war that these people experience through the emergence of Godzilla. And the important thing to understand is the key in that here is not Godzilla. Godzilla is yet again used as a metaphor here, not as kind of the star, unlike the Godzilla and Kong franchise that has come out and become kind of a popcorn blockbuster, you know, extravaganza. This movie kind of goes back to that original idea of this should be about the people dealing with war and dealing with the after effects of these kind of atrocities. And in this case, it is represented by Godzilla. So we have Godzilla in the film, but it's actually really more also about the sacrifice and the grief and loss that the people experience. So we're constantly seeing the individual characters working through these past traumas and dealing with and coping with their grief, and as well as their guilt and remorse. So, you know, guilt, grief, and remorse become kind of an ongoing theme in here. And on a personal level within the film, the character Koichi Shikishima, I hope I said that correctly, Koichi grapples with shame and PTSD with Godzilla manifesting as kind of the embodiment of his anguish. These scenes really reflect a broader metaphor for, I think, even national guilt and the struggle to forgive past mistakes. This kind of ties into another theme I mentioned before, that metaphor of national guilt. You know, Godzilla's return symbolizes the unresolved guilt and shame carried by the survivors of the war. We have to understand that, like, they're in Japanese culture and just in general. I mean, whenever you think of people dying, if you make it through, it's like, why did I make it and they didn't? And there are, that's just one example. I mean, there are many examples of people in this film having or representing this kind of guilt. The whole thing represents Japan's struggle to come to terms with its own history. And so that is an interesting thing. And the cool thing about this is it is, on one hand, a period piece that is kind of representing the original intent of the Godzilla franchise from 1954, if I'm not mistaken. And then what we see now is not only do we see that depicted, but we also see that kind of representing a more modern metaphor as well. So I love how the film actually is able to encompass like the original intent while also kind of making it a little more modern without feeling modern, if that makes sense. The last kind of theme I want to talk about briefly is just the human resilience, I guess, if you'd call it a theme. Contrasting to previous Godzilla films that focus more on monster battles and stuff, those kind of later, like 60s and 70s especially, this iteration emphasizes the kaiju's impact as a catalyst for human resilience in the face of enduring trauma post-atomic bombs, right? Instead, like I said earlier, instead of it being about the monster battles, what we see is this being a very human story. It's about the civilians. It's about the people, like I said, who have survived, or the people trying to survive. There is a moment where the protagonist I had to make sure I was talking about the right person. Where one of our protagonists, Koichi, watches essentially an entire platoon of people be murdered by Godzilla. And he has to go on surviving and trying to figure out, you know, what to do next now. What do you do in a situation like that? I think on this level, Godzilla Minus One is... I haven't seen Shin Godzilla from, 2016 or something? And after seeing clips, I actually really want to see it. With Minus One, I have a hard time... I have a hard time kind of arguing against why this wouldn't be in the top three best Godzilla movies. Am I wrong? Please tell me. I don't want this to be like a recency bias thing. most of them are just kind of popcorn flick monster movies. And if you love that, great. Those will definitely be better than this, right? But I feel like this one carries some actual weight. And the first Godzilla film, especially for the 1950s, you can get a good vibe from that movie as well. And you can see the importance of it at it for its place in time, how well it pulls that off for that point in history. This film, I think, does a lot of those things and arguably better. But when you talk about, like, relatively speaking, like, I think they in many ways can be argued possibly as equals in a way. Any huge Godzilla fans are going to just call me a heretic and just, like, hate me. I am not a huge Godzilla fan, quote unquote. I do like Godzilla, but I'm not, like, dying to go to the movies when I see a new Godzilla movie come out. So, yeah, keep that in mind. That's like a very important lens I'm looking at this through. That said, I have a few concerns about this movie. I'll let the cat out of the bag now. I give this film a 4 out of 5. I thought it was really solid. The people that gave it 4.5 and 5 out of 5, great. Cool. Like, you liked it a little more than me. And then the people that gave it less, when I read kind of their thoughts on it, I'm like, well, that makes sense. I do find this movie to be really impressive. My concern is, will this movie hold up and be a 4 out of 5 in, say, even 10 years, 15 years? I think this film is so special effects heavy. And for 2024, for the budget it has, for it coming from Japan, who's never, I mean, they often have special effects, but they're never kind of renowned as like the greatest special effects ever. For a film to come from Japan and get all the accolades that Godzilla Minus One has, I watched it and I'm like, this is barely keeping up with the times. And I liked it. Don't get me wrong. Like, I never complained about it or anything, but I'm like, this is like just a step away. Okay. This is an inch away from not holding up already, to kind of what we've come to expect with these big blockbusters, which I think most blockbusters look stupid. So understand that, like, I'm not trying to claim that they're better. But in terms of like how special effects function, this one, the way that the special effects are used is key, because they're not only used as spectacle here, but the film does rely on them a lot. And most films that rely on special effects, especially CG, do not age well. So my fear is that this film, for all of its great narrative and storytelling beats, which should last the test of time, if the movie looks like shit, and I'm afraid it's going to eventually, especially by comparison, I don't think this is going to hold up. That's my biggest concern. Again, narratively, great. But whenever such a big focus is on the special effects, which this movie does do, I just don't think those things are going to hold up. And what sucks is you watch a lot of Godzilla movies, you're like, oh, that's a dude in a suit, or oh, that looks really silly, or that's a puppet. But I think practical effects like that actually hold up way more, because you can at least say that's a dude in a suit. That suit fits in its environment. You know, like, it doesn't look fake in kind of an uncanny valley, you'll never look real enough way, right? It looks real. It just doesn't look believable, right? Like, that's the difference. There's a difference between something being believable and something looking real. And the uncanny valley will always separate CG from looking absolute real. Now, there are times where it can kind of trick us and we can immerse ourselves into it. And I was able to do that through most of Godzilla Minus One. I just don't think that's going to be the case in 10 or 20 years. So unfortunately, I don't think, like most new movies that rely heavily on special effects, this is going to hold up. Unfortunately, I am so, so happy that it did so well, that it has garnered the accolades that it has, and that it is as good a film as it is, because it is very good. The last thing I'll say is, you know, the visual effects team led by Yamazaki, of course, was relatively small. It consisted of 35 artists who crafted 610 VFX shots on a budget of less than $15 million. That's absolutely outstanding. Despite the limited resources, their work was groundbreaking, earning them the Oscar, as I said, for Best Visual Effects. This is the 30th mainline installment, the 37th Godzilla film overall. And I just really think that this is one, if you're going to see any Godzilla movie that's come out in the last decade even, this is the one to watch for sure. I mean, this was so praised last year, and it was on some top 10 lists, and the ones that it didn't, it made like so many honorable mentions lists. And though this wouldn't have ended up being on my top 10, I don't think, it definitely would have been an honorable mention of mine. I hope you'll go check it out. Like I said, it is on Netflix right now. So if you get a chance, go check it out. Once you do see it, or if you already have seen it, for example, Adge, hit me up. If you agree or disagree, any of you, on this, go to Instagram, MediumCoolPod, send me a direct message. I will totally get back to you as soon as I see it. MediumCoolPod@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of Godzilla Minus One. Again, awesome movie. I'm afraid it's not going to hold up. What do you think? Let me know, and I will be back here in just a moment to talk about the new A24 movie, Janet Planet. All right, everyone, Janet Planet, which came out, well, it's about to come out this Friday, June 28th, 2024. It's written and directed by Annie Baker, and the cast is Zoe Ziegler, Julianne Nicholson, Will Patton's in it, Elias Koteas. I always forget how to say his name, and then I just choked myself. I'm okay. And then Sophie Okonedo is in this. I'm dying now. I should probably edit this, but I'm not going to. So this is a film. I'm very thankful to A24 for giving me a screener for this. Janet Planet is an A24 film that tells the story of 11-year-old Lacey, who spends the summer of 1991 in rural western Massachusetts. Enthralled by her own imagination and the attention of her mother, Janet, Lacey experiences the passage of time in the unique way only a child can. As the summer unfolds, three visitors are drawn into their lives, each captivated by Janet's enchanting nature. The film, directed by Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Annie Baker, explores the nuances of a mother-daughter relationship and the complexities of growing up. Lacey's inner world is so vivid that it begins to merge with reality, painting a sublime portrait of a daughter's journey of falling out of love with her mother. Janet Planet is a contemplative drama that captures the essence of childhood wonder and the bittersweet nature of maturation. I'm speaking weird because I need a drink. But I'm like refuse. I'm like being so stubborn because I just want to record this right now. But this movie is a really interesting experience. First off, when I found out that Annie Baker was a prize-winning playwright, I was blown away because for two reasons. One, this is a film by a filmmaker that understands how to show, don't tell kind of a situation. Also, it is a very quiet, not a dialogue-driven film at all, not even a character-driven film as much. It's more of almost like a meditation on this slice of life. So we kind of just watch these people live, and as we watch them live, we see them exist more than experience a plot. And through this existence, we learn about these three people that come into Janet's life. And when I learned that Annie Baker was a playwright, I'm like, man, like the whole idea of the stage, not that you can't show, don't tell there, but a lot of times it is the dialogue. It is the person, everyone on stage freezing, but the protagonist, and they walk up to the audience and provide a monologue to give us, you know, to give us insight into what they're feeling, because you can't always see their face so up close, or you can't experience certain things. So they let us into those characters, or like a David Mamet, where it's almost all dialogue pretty much, you know what I mean? And so this is so interesting because this film to me could not be a stage thing. Like, this is film. And I'm not even like a huge fan of this style of film, but when I watched it, I was like, this is a filmmaker that knows movies, right? And then the playwright thing really threw me off. So I love that about the movie. And you know, kudos to Annie Baker for making like a film that I've seen people consider like this is like an American independent version of an Ozu film or something, you know, which I am not as familiar with Ozu. I've seen very few things. And it's been so long since I've seen them. He's someone I really need to go back and kind of reacquaint myself with and kill some of the blind spots. But yeah, I didn't even draw that parallel at all. I want to start with this. There are a few things. I'm taking a drink. Seamless edit. Anyways, so the thing about Janet Planet is while I was watching it, I realized how it was exploring certain themes that kind of stood out to me. Maternal love being one, of course. Personal growth in Lacey's journey. You know, childhood innocence and imagination. We see identity and womanhood. And then solitude and connection are kind of five things that popped out to me that I wrote down while I was watching it. And the maternal love thing I find really interesting. The film examines the intricate bond between mother and daughter. I think it showcases the profound influence a mother has on her child's development and worldview. And there are some really lovely moments between Janet and Lacey where, for example, one of the three people that come into their life is Will Patton's character, who is Janet's partner at the beginning of the film. And Lacey have a bizarre interaction in the middle of the night at one point where Will Patton's character is experiencing an intense headache, and Lacey is like really bothering him because she won't stop talking and she won't, you know, all these things are happening. And it's not that he's like physically abusive per se that I remember. I don't remember him being, but it's a really intense moment, I guess. And it was an intense moment for Lacey. And there are these really kind of touching moments where the mom, where Janet and Lacey kind of have these conversations about like what Janet should do. And you know, how they're feeling about it. And so the maternal love part of it is like, you get that pretty much from the beginning of the film. It's very clear what their relationship is. The opening of the film is extremely quiet. And I believe one of the first points of dialogue is Lacey basically saying, if you don't come get me, I'm going to kill myself. It's like this like darkly comic, though she's very serious. Well, she's not seriously going to harm herself, but she's very serious about, you need to come get me. And you learn that she's at camp, you know, and she like fucking hates it there. And just like the way that she and Janet like interact is I think really realistic. Because it's not like Janet is completely just enthralled in everything Lacey does. It's not like that at all, which is much like real parents. Like my daughter does things all the time, and it's not like it's my favorite thing. I like it, or I experience it because she likes it, and I love that, you know, but, you know, I don't always love the things she loves the same way that she doesn't love the things I love, right? And so I find the relationship, the mother-daughter relationship here, very impactful, very good. The Lacey's personal growth is experienced. I'm trying to think how I want to word this. Lacey's journey of self-discovery and personal growth as you know, she navigates the complexities of her emotions and relationships. That is all done through experiencing her living this life. It's very rarely spoken about. You just watch her experience and observe things that change or challenge how she moves through this world. And, you know, Lacey has a very vivid imagination. The way she perceives the world around her highlights the theme of that childhood innocence, I think. She's a believable kid. She's an outcast. She's a little nerd. She's, you know, she's her own person. And I love that about Lacey's character as well. She's not a stereotype per se. She's not an overly precocious kid even. There are a lot of stereotypes you could go into, but quite frankly, Lacey's just a kid. And I like that. I like that. But she's not like a super hyperactive kid, you know? She's just like a kid. She's cool. I think through Lacey's eyes, we see also kind of her interpretation of love and friendship and womanhood, all shaped by her relationship with her mother. These three people that come into her life, some of which end up being partners, some of which are friends, you know, but these people that come into her life, Lacey's always watching, like, what her mother's doing and how she responds to certain things and who she's with and what those people are like. And it kind of informs how Lacey sees relationships and the world. And that is conveyed through the experiential nature of the film as well. Again, no one's straight up saying, look, Lacey's looking at them and wondering about X and Y and Z. No, you just like see her hanging out and those people are around and she kind of gets along with them, or she doesn't, or she, you know, she does X while they're doing Y. Like it's a very like slice of life. You're just living with these people. It's not a plot movie. I can't stress that enough. It's not a big, like, all right, cool. Like here's the big hook. Here's the big twist. No. The movie starts out damn near silent. And you just watch people moving around. Like it's one of those kind of slow burns. But the film portrays, I think, the balance of solitude in nature, because Janet is kind of like an still kind of a hippie, but like an old, like used to be a hippie and now still kind of lives in that way. And she's out in nature in this really like cool and nice house. But then there's also the desire for human connection, you know, as Lacey and Janet interact with like these visitors who enter their lives, you start to see their secluded nature, but also their desire to connect. We see this at the very beginning too, because, you know, when Lacey asks Janet to pick her up at camp to leave, as soon as they start to leave and they get in the car or on their way, Lacey's like, hey, can I actually stay? Which I actually have done that with my friends when I used to stay all night when I was a kid. And I'd be like, someone needs to come get me. This kid is driving me crazy. And then like we would do something. It's like, actually, I kind of want to stay. Now, my mom would always make me go. Like, no, you called me over here. You got to go. And that's kind of how Janet is. But Lacey like hated it at camp. And then someone showed, like after she'd called her mom, someone was showing her kindness and acknowledging her as a person. And then she didn't want to go, you know? And so my point is like there's from the very beginning of the film, you see Lacey wanting to make these connections. And we see, an example in that moment of the relationship between Janet and Lacey as well. So all that to say, it's a lovely experience to watch them kind of move through life. And these themes all contribute to the film's really, I would say that probably contemplative is a good word for it. Atmosphere and you know, it all provides a rich tapestry for, you know, the audience to engage with the characters in their lives and relationships. But this film is almost exclusively a meditative experience. It's a slice of life picture where we watch people exist more than we experience a plot, like I said. So whenever you go into this, understand that this is going to be a pretty gritty, not super crisp. Like this looks like it was shot on an old film camera. It just reeks of the 90s to me, which is when it takes place, and all of the characters are cool. So why did I give this a 3 out of 5? Because a lot of people are really raving about this. Honestly, if you were to go to Letterboxd right now, it is heavily skewed from about 3.5 to 5, you know? And I think that's because of that comparison and that connection to older filmmakers that did this style of filmmaking. There is a very specific, not because of that, like not because someone thought like, oh, this reminds me of like an American Ozu. No, no, no. I'm just saying like, if you're really into this kind of slow slice of life experiential thing, you will fucking dig this movie. I do like movies like that. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. In this case, there wasn't enough to hook me for me to be overly enthusiastic about this, nor did enough happen in the film for me to love it. But all I stand by all the themes I mentioned and all the things I've said up to this point. Janet Planet is a definitely a cool movie. If you're into like slow drama, you know, slow, quiet, experiential drama stuff, you should definitely check this out. This will be in your wheelhouse if you're into that. Again, it has to be a very specific type of movie, I feel like, for me to get really into this, or it has to really be digging deep into emotions that resonate with me. This didn't as much. I'm not saying it's bad, because it's not at all. I'm actually eager to see what Annie Baker does next. I would be really interested to see what the next film is. But all in all, this film is a great debut for Annie Baker. I'm pretty sure this is her first film, but I'm going to actually double check that right now. It looks like that is true. Yep. So as for Annie Baker's debut, I was pretty sure that was the case, but I was afraid I had misspoke. But yeah, this is a great debut. I think, although I'm not like a massive fan, like I don't really care if I see it again, but if I did, I wouldn't complain about it. I'd probably watch it with very specific people. This is not something I'd have like a party and throw this on. I think this would be a party killer in that situation. Just because it is so slow. And if you're not ready to kind of contemplate and experience what is being offered to you, I think this is going to be a dud. If you're open to the experience like I was, it's cool. I don't know, for example, like, I don't know how my wife feels about this movie or would feel about this movie, you know, because I don't know how much she's experienced like this. So, yeah, I guess go into it with a grain of salt after hearing this. It depends on how you feel about these things. But if you're really into more experiential films, I think this is one to definitely check out if you're looking for 2024 films. They're going to kind of stand out from the rest. I think this is the one to go for. All that said, if you get a chance to see this weekend, or if you're one of the lucky ones that had a limited release last Friday and you're able to... and you've already been able to see this, please let me know. I'd love to know what you think. Again, for me on a personal level, I don't feel like this film offers enough for me to be like super enthusiastic about it, but I do see the skill behind it. And I think, again, I'm very impressed that a playwright, a medium that is often like a writer's medium, you know what I mean? Basically said, you know what, I'm going to make something that has little dialogue, and the dialogue is not going to explicitly state what people are feeling, but rather it's going to like lead you to those answers. I just think Annie Baker has like she's proven that she has skill. I would love to see more. If you agree or disagree, please let me know. Medium Cool Pod on Instagram, or you can email us at mediumcoolpod@gmail.com. I will definitely see it, and I would love to hear your thoughts on Janet Planet. That said, I will be right back to let you know what's coming out this Friday, and you know, I'll leave you off with something. Godzilla Minus One and Janet Planet. Wow. Like I said at the top of the show, next week I'm planning on talking with Matt Soucy about Donald Sutherland. We're going to do a little memorial episode for him. I also have plans that I would love to do a Paul Schrader marathon, like a retrospective piece, and then also cover movies like Blue Collar and... rewatch Hardcore and all that stuff. I think it would be so fun. And I just got to make sure I have time to tackle all of those because there are several movies I want to cover. And if I could get someone else on board to do it, and if they would actually show up, that would be awesome. So, I'm looking forward to that. In terms of what is coming out this week, let me find it here. There we go. Out this Friday, the 28th, we have the first part of Horizon, an American Saga. If you don't know this Kevin Costner Western series that's coming out, he has the first part now, and I believe it's something like in August, part two comes out. I believe part three and four, perhaps, might have been greenlit already. So this might be a new Western franchise that Costner's been putting out. But I'm super excited about part one here. And then A Quiet Place Day One for all you sick horror fucks out there. Definitely feel free to go check that out. I'd love to hear what you think. But until then, till next time, good night, good luck, and take it easy.